Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom the Digital Architect Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, marketers. We're back. With me today, I have Shep Hyken. He is a customer service and keynote speaker. He works with companies who want to build loyal relationships with their customers and employees. And just by looking at the website now, I can see that Shep, and we kind of talked about this for a second, he deals with corporate places for the most part. So let's get some info that he teaches some of the top CEOs and figure out how we can use it ourselves. Hey, Shep.
Hey, man. Great to be here. Thanks, Tom, for having me.
Yeah, so let's continue that. You know, so yeah, we mentioned the corporate thing, but yeah, you know, it's super hard, I feel. And a lot of us with the smaller companies, we have people outsourced to the Philippines and Eastern Europe, you know, to make the customer experience great. You know, we don't want to be like Apple or some of these companies that you call them up and someone says like, oh, how are you? I am John from Minnesota. And I'm like, no, you're not. You're not John from Minnesota. And right there, I already get disengaged.
Well, first of all, yes, a couple of things. Number one, I do work a lot with the corporate world. They're the ones that hire me to go out and deliver, a speech at a conference. But I do an awful lot of work with smaller businesses, with consulting, training. We even have our own online offerings. But to your point, here's the thing about if you're going to go to a third party and outsource your customer service, do your research and make sure you're going to get somebody that's going to be congruent and in alignment with the brand and the image that you want to create. And by the way, there are plenty of them out there. They don't have to be on U.S. soil. They can be in the Philippines. They could be in India. They could be anywhere in the world. But it's just, you know, it's you do your research and you get the right people.
Yeah, and even when we're not outsourcing it in that way, we just hire people ourselves. Like in my company, I have my own employees, right? In Eastern Europe and in the Philippines. So these are my hires, you know, but there's still a barrier, right? There's still not even the cultural difference, but just the point that I haven't met my employees, some of them, you know, and just getting them to be on the same page as the rest of the company. You know, what tips do you have for that? Because that's something a lot of us deal with.
Sure. Well, number one, that's called training. And if you don't train people right at the beginning, they're never going to get into it. But let's go through a real quick process that any company could use. It's a six-step process in creating a customer-focused culture. And by the way, a small business has a great opportunity compared to a large business because, I call it six simple steps. And a guy raised his hand one day. He says, how long is it going to take me for to implement this in my company? I go, how many employees do you have? And he said, 35,000. I said, 4 to 6 years. When do you want to get started? However, if you've got, you know, two or three employees, you can do it in 4 to 6 weeks. If you've got, you know, 100 employees, you can do it in 4 to 6 months. I mean, it doesn't take a long time for a smaller business. But here are the six steps, really quick, real simple. Number one, the vision has to start with the leadership. And that means leadership defines the vision. And I always suggest a vision should be one sentence or less. Now, this is not your company vision. This is your customer service and customer experience vision. An example of this, and I use this all the time, is the Ritz-Carlton has probably the best 9-word service vision of any company. And by the way, I refer to these short little phrases or sentences as mantras, something you can easily remember and repeat over and over again. Ritz-Carlton, 9 words long. We're ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Horst Schultz came up with this, brought it into the company, And every person that comes to work at the Ritz, that's what they know when they come in. That's how they train them. That's what they do. So that's number one, is define the vision. Number two is communicate it, and communicate it often. How do you roll it out, and how do you keep it in front of people so they're constantly reminded of it? Number three is training. And I'm going to assume, by the way, you have already hired the right people. So training is not just something you do at the onboarding stage, but it's something you do ongoing, and you sustain it with short little reminders throughout the year, and maybe even on a weekly basis, if not a minimum of a monthly basis, reminding people about what they need to do to keep the level of service up. So that's step three. Step four, leadership has to actually role model and or basically be the role model and demonstrate to everyone else, this is the way we do it. And I'll give you a quick example. Walt Disney used to walk through the theme park, and if he saw a piece of paper on the ground, he'd stoop down, pick it up, and throw it away. And all of the employees, who they call cast members at a Disney theme park, would watch Walt Disney throw that piece of paper away. And he used to say, and he, by the way, he called that stooping to excellence. And he used to say, if he didn't stoop down and pick up that piece of paper, that he was given permission for everyone else to walk by that piece of paper as well. So he recognized modeling what you want is so important as a leader. So that's step four. Step five is a really important piece of it. You keep people in alignment. I once asked the CEO, what's your most important job? Pretty big company too. He said, my job is to defend the culture. And every leader needs to make sure that everybody is in sync and in alignment with the culture. And if not, they need to get them back in there. Maybe it's more training and coaching. Maybe it's not just one person, it's a whole department or an entire region. So that's something to think about. That's step five. Step six, this is the fun one. When it works, celebrate it. And that's the six-step process.
When it works, celebrate it.
Yeah, when it works, let people know, hey, we're doing a great job. And, you know, just let, you know, show appreciation. Throw a little party. You know, when you can, you know, if you've got a goal of hitting certain customer satisfaction numbers and you get there, celebrate it.
When I listen to these steps, right, it does sound quite corporate. And it does seem like it would be much easier to implement in a place where everyone works in the same building, or at least, you know, the supervisors and people work close together. How do you recommend to implement this for these teams that are so distributed, right? Everyone works from home and from their own spots. So you don't see Walt Disney picking up the paper because you don't even see Walt Disney. I may be on a call once a week.
Yeah, well, why not on a call once a week? I mean, I think there's lots of ways to do this. This is not what you're describing to me is very common in today's world. You may have, and I think, Tom, you mentioned that you have employees that you've never met before that you're sourcing out. And if they're really on your team and they're full-time employees, you need to have ongoing, regular communication so they feel as if they're part of a team, so they don't feel as if they're an outlier in another country altogether, doing something, almost feeling like they're on a rogue mission, even though they've been given, you know, direction on what to do. So I think that's a matter of your mindset and bringing everybody together. You know, we're talking today on Skype. You've got Skype, you've got Zoom, you've got Google Hangouts, you've got multiple ways of bringing people together face-to-face via the internet. I say face-to-face, digitally face-to-face, via the internet. And you can have virtual meetings, you know, today where, you know, 5 years ago, that would have never have happened.
That is true. And I'll tell you this, I've gotten better at communicating the vision. I think that's key. With the training, what I've done is I spoke with the team and helped them figure out what we want to do. And they actually created the documents of how to interact with people because they're the ones doing it. They'll never see me interact with a customer unless I record it, which I've done a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that I've noticed, and I really dropped the ball on this, and I think a lot of people do too, is we are so focused on growth and making sure the business survives and does well. We don't have a company service vision, you know, at least not for a long time. In the beginning, it's just, you know, we need to make money vision.
Well, do you know what the function of every business in the world is?
Serve customers. I know that.
Right,
but
right.
I'm just talking about the mindset.
Money.
Yeah.
It's not to make money. It's to get and keep your customers. The goal is to make money. And if you start out with just focusing on the goal and not recognizing what your function of your business is, you're not going to achieve the goal. So, you know, that's number one. I think to think about is that, you know, you recognize without customers, you don't have a business. So what are you doing to get and keep them? And the keeping is very important because virtually every statistic will tell you it is far less expensive to keep a customer. If you're the type of business that would have repeat business, and almost every business is, far less expensive to keep the customer than to keep trying to acquire new ones. Because if you're churning them and they're not coming back, it means you're not doing something right and you're destined to go out of business. Eventually, there will be no more customers.
It's true, but I will push back a little bit and give you a different situation. I want to get your take on this one because it's super common around some of my friends. They build up huge businesses on Amazon, right? So let's see, with Amazon products or like our team with books. And Amazon takes care of all the customer service stuff. And then there comes a moment where we all try to get off from Amazon to move away and make our own business. And now it's this, you know, the last 3 years, we've all been focusing on growing the business and we haven't had to deal with customer service as much. You know, some with products, yeah, but with books, like I never heard a word from a customer that Amazon had. But when you move away from that, now the whole team needs to right away get into dealing with customers. So I would be curious how you would walk someone through that.
Well, you know, number one is... I would be prepared. You've got to be prepared. You can't go and say, okay, I'm moving off Amazon. Now what? No, you're thinking about this ahead of time. You know you have to have customer service. So here's one idea. I once worked with a small company, three or four people, and they said, how should we handle customer service? We get calls throughout the day. Not many, but we get calls, you know, maybe five a day. And I go, okay. What I want each of you to do is to take out of an 8-hour day, 2 hours. That's your job. For that 2 hours, you're in charge of customer service. You may or may not get a call during those 2 hours, but that's your job. So all four of these people split their time up, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours, 2 hours. That was their full day. And it worked. What happened when they had 30 people, like 2 years later? They recognized the power of everybody having time on the phone with a customer, understanding what their issues, questions, hopefully not many complaints were, but if they were there. And so what they said is, no matter what your job is, every week you're going to spend at least a half an hour, or every month or whatever. They got to a point where, you know, they were giving everybody some time on the front line to experience what customers were really talking about. You know, that's just the way, one way of doing it. By the way, you said something a little while ago. You said, you know, that mantra, that vision sounds very corporate. You know what? I'm a small company. I've got five people here. And here's our vision. Three words. Always be amazing. We came up with those three words and with the idea that we want to be amazing to people here. We want to be amazing to our clients. And we want to teach our clients to be amazing. I don't care if you're one or two people or you're, you know, 200,000 people. You can have a service vision. You don't have to be corporate to have that.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, we haven't developed one yet, but I always felt like it's a super corporate thing. But then, yeah, when you bring it back to having five employees, yeah, it's still possible. So with the businesses trying to move away from a big platform like Amazon, you would recommend for the current employees to all take roles in doing a little bit of customer service before they bring someone in full time to start getting that part taken care of?
Well, if you have the ability to bring someone in full time, that's great. But so the best companies in the world, everybody spends time on the front line. I'll go back from a book that I wrote back in 1989 or so it was sometime in the 90s anyway. Moments of Magic was the first customer service book I wrote. Now, we didn't have the internet back then. People weren't, and by the way, using the phone for customer service, believe it or not, it hadn't been around all that many years. I mean, that was it. It was either talk to somebody in person or call them on the phone or send a letter. Okay. There was barely email back then, it seemed. Anyway, I digress. But here's what Anheuser-Busch in St. Louis, Missouri, now they're an international company that's based in Belgium with InBev, but their executives were required to spend one day per quarter in the field with a salesperson, driving in a truck, visiting customers, and knowing exactly what's going on in the real world, not what's happening on the top floor of a corporate building. And I think that's the perfect example of why it's very easy today for an executive to walk downstairs or walk to the other building and sit in on phone calls and emails and social media connections. And when you're a small company, it's really easy because, you know, well, you're spread out a little bit, but still you can, with the way the system works today, you know, phones work where, you know, they call a main number and it can be distributed to anywhere in the world very easily and very quickly. So, you know, no excuse for even the small companies not to have that ability for everybody to spend a little bit of time on the direct front line.
It's funny. You just brought a lot of images back. I used to work in sales in a couple of different corporations. And yeah, we had these trainers and managers try to come in on the sales calls with us. So I had some, you know, during the day. And I remember vividly one of them that used to push these scripts on us and the ways we should sell in our market, because he was in Connecticut, we were in New York. And he went out with me, and I was like, you know what? You're this big trainer guy. You keep pushing this. Sell something. You know?
Right. I mean, why don't you go ahead and do it?
Yeah, and he couldn't sell anything the whole day, which is, you know, way below what I was doing every day. I was selling at least one or two. And I'm like, okay, so you're pushing all this stuff onto me, and you can't sell anything. And why should I listen to you? And obviously, you know, there was some friction, but it just brought back those memories. So let me ask you this. We are on the front lines in small businesses. So there's a lot of owners like myself who deal with customers directly. And that's just because customers always, at the end of the day, want to talk to us. How do we move that off our table a little bit to, you know, make room for actually being a CEO? And then feel comfortable that, you know, because there's a lot of micromanaging going on too when I talk to people, you know, like no one else can do it as good as me. Like, what advice would you give us?
You know what? There are people that can do it better than you. I guarantee it.
I know.
That's the first thing. I know. Not you as I'm not specifically saying to you, but when somebody says nobody does it better than me, that is the classic entrepreneurial trap. That is why and by the way, I'm a little guilty of that myself, but that is why companies sometimes don't grow beyond one or two people, because the entrepreneur who wore all of the hats at the very beginning of the venture now has to give away some of those hats to other people and is struggling really hard to make that happen. So you get good people, you trust them to do their job, you train them well, and as long as they do their job, you let them keep doing their job. And you know what? Now you have time to focus on other things, such as being the CEO.
Yeah, and that's something I've learned too after a couple failed businesses when I was younger. Most of the things I do, something else can do better. You know,
right.
I mean, really, most of the things I do.
Well, everybody has a unique ability.
Yeah.
And if the unique ability is something that a CEO and a leader should be doing, and that's really what they're great. So I'll give you an example, something pretty cool. We do something here. Every once in a while, we do what's called an activity inventory. Now, the first time we did it, it was amazingly revealing. Everybody in the office watched and observed me, the leader of the company, doing everything that I do. Now, if I did it once, that was all. I mean, it's like if I went over and made copies, you didn't have to say, oh, three times during the week he made copies. No, I did it once. That's enough. And what happened is we came up with about 41 different things that I did throughout the week. Everything from, we got a book order, I helped pack the books. You know, I talked to a client on the phone about a potential booking. I may have went over to a copy machine, as I mentioned before. 41 things. So we sat down as a team and we said, which of these things are the most important things that I should be doing? And we sat there and it was like, well, you should talk to the client. I mean, after all, you're the guy and, you know, you should be selling the client. You should be writing your speeches and working on your speeches. Great. The copy machine activity, boxing up a bunch of books to send out was not CEO revenue generating activity. We went from 41 things I should be doing to less than 15. And of the 15, you could categorize and group a bunch of the things I did with clients. If you said just, you know, general client relationships, that, you know, 5-6 things could be grouped just into that. So really we brought it down to under 10. And that was in 1 week. And all of a sudden I had hours of extra time during the week to be more effective of the things I should be doing.
Can you give some examples of the things that they took off your plate?
Sure. They said, do not ever stand next to a copy machine. Do not ever go into the product room. There's a reason you have an outbox, okay? The product room is where we keep all of our books and any of the other products we're selling. There's no reason for me to be in there. I should be on the phone talking to a client. By the way, the more I'm talking to a client, the more opportunity for our company is to grow, the more likely we are we're going to stay in business. And we've been in business for 34 years now, 35 years, I guess. And you know, that's what I should be doing, is the activity that generates forward motion for a company, be it, you know, some sales activity. And by the way, today, I have somebody that handles a lot of the sales, and I've had somebody handling sales for years and years. What happens is their job is to get to a point where the client finally does need to talk to me. Back at the beginning, I was the guy who was making all those calls, picking up the phone, smiling and dialing. But my goal is to spend, when it's time, to spend, you know, 15 minutes, an hour and 15 minutes, doesn't matter, talking to a client about engaging us for what they need. So, but there's an example. You know, I shouldn't go to the copy machine. I shouldn't be worried about managing the inventory of the product room. You know what? On my weekly meetings, come to me with those numbers. I don't need to count it myself.
I really like what you mentioned, the sales part. And I find that's the most important thing for any company. I always stress the sales. When did you start offsetting the sales and how did you proceed with that? Because that's super hard. I mean, you know, as the owners, we usually are the best salespeople for our companies. That's the one thing which is really hard to say, you know, someone else is better at selling than me. Maybe not.
And maybe, by the way, if your job is, you know, you started the company, but you excel in sales, maybe what you need to do is hire a chief operating officer, a president of the company. You can remain the owner. President could be a hired hand. They don't have to be the owner of the company. And then you can go out and rainmake for the company. By the way, that happens all the time. Companies get to a point where, hey, let's go and raise some money and expand. And they go to a venture capitalist. And the venture capitalist says, you know what? We love you and we want to keep you on. You're the best salesman. We're going to hire a president for you. And they fire this person from being the president and make them the head of sales. They still own the company or they still have the majority. You follow what I'm saying? That's your job. If that's what you're best at, go find somebody else to manage the day-to-day who's better than you.
Yeah, but I want to flip that around a little bit. So if you have a small company and let's say you're the CEO, you used to sell everything, and now you're able, you may be not the best salesperson, right? But you just still did it just because you were the owner, the first employee. And now you put that on someone else's shoulders and they bring in the sales. They pretty much own and run the company. You know, without them, there's nothing. The sales channel, it's just one person. So it's super scary for me to even think about something like that.
You better pay that person really well so they don't leave.
Yeah, but I mean, you can't ever, you know, guarantee that they won't leave. Like, what would you put in place to make sure that if they do leave, you know, you can still survive it?
Well, if you were making all the sales before and then you hired somebody to make the sales for you and they did better and you gave them that responsibility, you best, you know, be in a position to take it back and continue to sell until you find somebody who's really good again. You know, when you're in that small little company place, it's sometimes a little bit awkward and even dangerous because one person can completely change the landscape of your company. And hey, for many years, it was me and one other person. So I would make 100 calls a week and that other person's job was to make 100 calls a week. It takes approximately 2 hours a day for us to make those calls. About 15% of the people we called would actually back then answer the phone. Today, I don't think it's even that high. Okay. But of the 15% that did answer the phone, we had about 12% of the people that were sincerely interested in what I did. So you can see what's happening with the numbers. You know, it's we're down to maybe for every 100 connections we actually make, maybe one person is truly interested. And it would take probably, I'm going to say 4 to 5 truly interested people to get one person to buy. So we're talking about over a period of a month, we're lucky if we make 100 connections, 150 connections. So that's how our numbers worked. And by the way, very, very aware of the numbers. And I have the firm belief there are definitely people that are better at selling than others. However, if you teach somebody to communicate, if you hire a good communicator, and if all they do is simply communicate the story well, you're about 80% of the way there.
Can you expand on that, communicating the story?
Well, I mean, it's instead of selling, you're telling, but you're telling in a way that's engaging. And again, a lot of that is sitting down with your employee and role playing, pretending I'm the customer and you're trying to talk to me about what we do. Do you understand it? Can you answer all the questions? And a salesperson moves in for, and I hate the word close because, you know, it just sounds like an aggressive move. But a salesperson knows how to move it from just a conversation to an actual sale. But a good communicator, getting it to the point of, wow, you know, it sounds like this is a really good fit. You know what the next step is? I'm going to set up an appointment for you to talk to Shep. That's me, okay, because I was the better of the salesperson. But guess what happened? Instead of me spending all that time trying to nurture and even, you know, canvas the prospects and for lack of a better term, call it cold calling, I was doing something else simply by, the something else was I was simply there for the big conversation. Nothing leading up to it. By the time it got to me, the client is ready to buy.
You know, customer service, a big portion of that is pretty much being sort of like the salesperson and being able to answer all the questions and kind of, you know, push people along, you know, in case we want to sell to them again. So, you know, it's that same type of sales experience, you know, the whole time. When you grow your team, how do you get them to know how to answer all these questions? Because you can't role play with every single one of them, unless you have managers just doing that, but that's just an extra person on your team.
All right, if you're getting to that point, I think at that point, you're not managing your company well.
Right.
If you're growing people and not training them, you're making a huge mistake. The cost of not training somebody could be far more expensive in lost business than spending the effort and money to train them.
That makes sense. Do you have any books that you recommend on this training and customer service that you always recommend to people?
Well, yeah, my own. When it comes to customer service, I've written 6 of them. But you know what? It's when it comes to sales, my books aren't about sales. My books are truly about customer service. Mm-hmm. So the second to last book I wrote, Amaze Every Customer Every Time, has 52 tools, things that you would sit down and you would want to probably, I argue that all 52 of them are valid for any company. I think if you sat down and looked through the book, any company come up with 40 of them for sure. And these are the 40 things that you'll train people to, the strategies, the tactics that are used to develop relationships with customers. And do it do it over time. You don't need to do all 40 at once. You can do one a week. And that's what I would suggest. My most recent book is more of a book that focuses on individual habits, good habits. And by the way, great for salespeople, great for customer service people, great for anybody. Good habits are good habits. By the way, if you're not serving an outside customer who buys and pays you for whatever you do, you're taking care of somebody internally. That's your internal customer. So all the things we talk about are really about relationship building skills. But anyway, Amaze Every Customer Every Time. And then the most recent book, Be Amazing or Go Home, are two good resources that anybody can enjoy. You can get those on Amazon.
Be amazing or go home. I'll put them in the show notes too. I know we have a hard stop, so Shep, thank you for coming on. And where can people find you?
Just go to hyken.com, H-Y-K-E-N.com, and there you'll click on customer service articles, or it might say customer service blog. There's 500 articles on there. Go to my YouTube channel, Shep, S-H-E-P.TV, and you'll find 500 videos, short little videos that you can use to train your people. Some of them may seem a little bit more sales than just customer service, and if that's what you're into, search those out. And as a matter of fact, in just a little while, this afternoon, I'll be in the studio today filming more of these little short training segments. And they're there. They're available. There's no charge. And that's what we suggest everybody use to start things off.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.